By now, I'm sure you've seen the footage of the horrific, just devastating wildfires that have consumed so much of Los Angeles, the area around Los Angeles, over the past week or so. The latest death toll for the fires is 24. That number almost certainly will rise. Perhaps even by the time you're listening to this, it will have risen. The property damage total is sure to be astronomical when they get done adding it all up. And even though this is still very much an ongoing story, the fires are still burning, the wind is still blowing, the situation is not yet fully contained. I think it's also important to sort of look ahead a bit and also backwards a bit to see how the rebuilding process after an event like this will be helped or hindered by some of the state policies that have been in place for a while. And that's what we're going to get into today. Hi, folks. I'm Eric Bame with Reason Magazine. Thanks for joining us on this edition of American Radio Journal. My guest today is Christian Britschke. He's a colleague of mine at Reason Magazine, a reporter for us, and he's written quite a bit over the past few days about the policy implications of these just devastating wildfires in LA. Christian, thanks for taking some time with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Really glad to have you here. Let's start with a piece that you wrote last week. The headline on this one is California's insurance regulation fixes came too little too late. Again, people can find this at reason.com. We don't have time to get through all of it here, but really, if you can, in a nutshell, take me through the restrictions that California's placed on homeowners insurance, because it seems like that's a serious factor here. A lot of people don't have enough insurance to potentially rebuild after something like this.
Yeah, so California has two important restrictions on insurers' ability to raise premiums. One is they can only factor in like past losses from wildfires, and they have to average those past losses over the past 20 years, which obviously gives you a lower figure than the wildfire risk people currently face, given that wildfire risks are going up and the risks are concentrated in more recent years. And on top of that, insurers aren't able to factor in the cost of reinsurance when they set premiums, and reinsurance is just insurance on insurance, which has been going up to reflect those increased wildfire risks. And so what you have is a situation where insurers can't charge, you know, accurate premiums to their customers. And so what they've done instead is just start trying to limit their business that they do in the state. You know, the state's two largest insurers, State Farm, Farmers, said last year that they would stop issuing new policies, accepting new customers. There's been a huge surges in non-renewals of policies, and there's also been a large uptick in the amount of people who can't find any private insurance and therefore have to go on the state's high-risk plan or the FAIR plan, which, as you know, a lot of coverage has put it out, only covers $3 million in property, which, you know, for some very expensive California homes and a lot of the homes affected by these fires is not enough to cover the entire value of the property. The FAIR plan itself only has a few billion in reserves, is what its own officials have said. And they've also said that, you know, if there is a big event, which we've now experienced, it's going to require a massive assessment, meaning that the plan is funded by the state's private insurers collectively. And if it doesn't have enough money to pay out, then it'll need to levy an assessment on those insurers and, in effect, on policyholders. So regular policyholders are going to be in a position where they're going to have to bail out this state high-risk plan.
Yeah, the money's got to come from somewhere. That's always the case. I want to go back to something you said in your first answer there, too, about the way California structures this requirement for what insurers are allowed to look at. I mean, it seems to me somewhat contradictory that you have a state that has taken so many actions in recent years with an eye towards climate change, you know, trying to reduce emissions, things like that, with the sense that climate risks are getting greater. And then on the other hand, you've got this state policy, you know, enacted by the same politicians that effectively says, well, you can't take into effect that greater risk. That's literally what insurance is, right? Is pricing risk. Those two things just don't seem to go together to me. Am I missing something, or is this really like a glaring contradiction here?
Well, I mean, it is a contradiction. You know, far be it for me to defend California politicians, but I guess to give them their due, the real villains are the voters from 40 years ago. You know, these limitations were established by voters in a ballot initiative passed in 1988. And in order to change that ballot initiative, you have to get 2/3 approval in the legislature and then pass another successful ballot initiative in order to permanently amend California's insurance restrictions. Now, the state, because the situation has gotten so bad and insurers were basically ready all to leave the state, Gavin Newsom has exercised emergency authority to allow the insurance commissioner to come in and issue some emergency regulations that allow, give insurers more flexibility about reinsurance, about using kind of forward-looking catastrophe models when pricing their insurance. But even that is kind of an open question of whether he has the legal authority to do it. So the state certainly has itself in a bind. It is certainly has contradictory policies when it comes to being proactive on climate change in one sense, but then not allowing insurers to factor in climate change into their own policies in another sense. But it's not necessarily politician A holding both views in his mind at the same time, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah, fair enough. It was the voters a while ago. This is like the classic case of setting price controls, right? Just like rent control, it benefits people at the time. You don't necessarily take into account the consequences that'll happen down the road. That seems to be what's gone on here.
If I could say too, you know, it's the worst price controls are the price controls you put on insurance, because, you know, with rent control, you know, you limit the price, but, you know, the market still exists to some extent, whereas the only purpose, the housing still exists, the only purpose of insurance is to provide a price based on the risk that, you know, a property or, you know, a policyholder faces. And so when you control that price, you almost make the policy, you know, the whole market meaningless.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we've seen with the insurers leaving the market. But I think that's a great point. And Christian, thanks for taking some time with us, man. Really important topic here, and thanks for walking us through it.
Thanks for having me.
And once again, thanks to Christian. You could check that out. Again, that's at reason.com. That's Christian's newsletter this week. Also, you can subscribe to his newsletter there. Rent Free is the name of it. Check it out on our website and get it right in your inbox. Find it there. Of course, we send our thoughts and prayers to everybody out there affected by the devastating fires in and around the Los Angeles area. Hopefully things take a turn for the better in the near future here, and they're able to get that whole situation more under control. For Reason Magazine, I'm Eric Baim. Catch me right back here next week on another edition of American Radio Journal.